I'm Eleanor Tom, and I'm the Communities Writer in Residence for the Citizen Project. The I Write writers, who meet in Tollcross every week, decided to create a series of podcasts for people who are new to Edinburgh or new to Scotland. This is the second in the series, and it features some monsters and a few surprises.
Hello, I'm Elaine Harris. I belong to Edinburgh I Write group. Quite a lot of us meet. I've been coming to the group for, well, over 12 years now. I find writing very therapeutic, actually. It's good fun, and I actually write different things, short stories. And my poetry can be, sometimes it can be funny, sometimes it can be very serious. It can be even spiritual, or it can be landscape. But for now, I'll read my short story, Out of the Mist. It was a freezing cold, misty day in Leith, so I put on my warmest coat, hat, gloves and boots. I set off for the supermarket, a list of the groceries I needed for the day clutched in my hand. When I got outside, I could hardly see where I was going. Then I saw a horrid thing, which gleamed brightly through the mist. A creature, purpley-green in colour, with grey horns, a red scaly tail, and three tiny red eyes. To my horror, it started moving swiftly towards me. I desperately wanted to escape from danger, but couldn't see where I was going. I ran at speed, straight into a lamppost, slumped on the ground and fell on my face. It was a nightmare, and the beast was now upon me. He picked me up off the floor like a rag doll and said, I'm not sure I like the look of you. I was in shock. My heart was pounding, but I managed to reply, I don't like the look of you either. He gave me a mean look, and he dropped me back on the ground. My nose was bleeding, and my head was throbbing in pain. He stood over me and declared, I refuse to eat you for breakfast. Be off with you. On your way. I lay still for a while where he had dropped me so unceremoniously. Eventually, I managed to scramble to my feet and walked home in a daze, just as the mist was clearing. I got home, lay down on the sofa and slept around the clock, waking early morning feeling battered and bruised. I knew I had to dig deep and not be held back by my terrible encounter. Such an experience might traumatise me forever. I must fight this fear and go out and get the groceries I needed. The kitchen cupboard was bare, and fear would not feed me today or any other day if I didn't move myself. I got ready slowly and left the house. As I walked along the road, I saw the newspaper billboard outside my local newsagent. The billboard poster read, The beast strikes again, but he is fussy what he eats. That made me shudder, and the chill permeated my whole being. I went into the shop and bought the newspaper. Reading the article was an eye-opener. The beast had spoken to a journalist and said, with all sincerity, I'm going home. I'm hungry, cold, and miserable. Everything here on earth is absolutely awful, and I can't leave soon enough. So goodbye, earth. Thanks for nothing, and I won't be back. I walked out of the shop and skipped happily down Leith Walk.
My name's Sylvia Trotter. Sometimes I write poetry, sometimes I write prose. My verse is sometimes free verse, but it's rather fun to write sort of old-fashioned verse which rhymes. Some of it's serious, some of it's humorous. I don't really know where I got the idea for this, to be perfectly honest. Honestly, don't know where the inspiration came from. Dancing with Unicorns by Sylvia Trotter. I had a boyfriend once who believed in unicorns. He told me he met up with them on the meadows. They all had names. I could never get him to divulge how he knew their names and ages. It seemed he just did. He couldn't explain why he had unicorn friends and I didn't. Was there some magic word or spell which conjured them up? Would he take me to meet them? He said they wouldn't come if he wasn't alone. I was puzzled that he told me about them at all, when he was reluctant to furnish any details. Maybe to show he had a hobby. I ran marathons, he hobnobbed with mystical creatures. The relationship ran its course. I never see him anymore. I now have a down-to-earth boyfriend who's as likely to meet up with unicorns as fly in the air. Much to my surprise, I really miss hearing about Geoffrey and his mates. Sometimes I'm even tempted to creep down to the meadows at twilight. The only thing is, will they come if I'm on my own?
My name is Janet Lewis. I've lived in Edinburgh now for about 9 years. Before that, I lived in the Highlands, where I taught in a secondary school for a very, very long time. My husband and I have been always interested in music and drama, so have been on stage singing and acting for most of my adult life. But I would like to read to you my story, The Selkie. I remember being told by Ma about us having Selkie blood in us. But mind, it's an old wife's tale. There's nae proof at all. Anyway, my family lived in Queensferry since way before yon bridges were built. We grubbed a living frae digging in the dirt and doing a bit of fishing. Our wee hoose was aside the sea, and waves were the soundtrack of our lives. Well, long, long ago, my granny's granny lived there wi' her da. He telt her to stay away from the water, but she couldna. She just loved being in the water, swimming, paddling, feeling the waves tickle her feet. Ony time her da was nae looking, she ran to the sea. He used to tell her, "Don't you go in there, lassie. The water's no place for you. Dangerous it is, dangerous." Then he'd grab her hand and drag her into the hoose. She promised her da she'd no go near the water, but she couldn't stay away. One nicht, she couldn't sleep and crept out of bed, down the creaky stairs and into the starlight. A full moon drenched the world in a gold licht. She ran into the water and kept walking. Further out in the sea, she could see a wee head above the waves. It came closer and closer until it was a cider. The huge soft eyes of a seal stared into her face. The girl climbed onto the back of the seal, and they both zoomed through the waves and out into deeper water. The girl was no afraid. She trusted the water beast. They skimmed the waves, slid through the moonbeams, and jumped o'er the floating seaweed. The girl clasped the seal round the neck and shouted with joy as they swam. At last, the seal turned and took her back to the beach. She climbed off the seal's back, stroked its nose, and gave it a huge cuddle. "Thank you. I just love that. You're my pal forever." The seal appeared to smile. Then the seal skin split down the back and fell onto the beach. And in its place stood a woman, a tall, fair-skinned, brown-haired, green-eyed woman. The girl's mouth dropped open as she watched this creature emerged from the grey skin and turned towards her. "My little darling, I've been watching you for so long. This is the first time I've been able to take you to my world." The woman knelt beside her and held her close. "My beloved daughter." The girl was afraid and tried to run away, but couldn't. Then she heard her da's voice. "What are you doing, you daft lassie? Where are you? I don't want you to come to harm." Then there was silence. The sea woman stood up. Her father was still. Her da looked at the seal woman, and she stared back at him. He reached out a hand and stroked her hair. "Och, my love, my darling, have you come back to me? Please say you've come back to stay. My heart is barren without you." The sea woman smiled and held his hand. "You know I can't stay. I just had to see my daughter. She's growing so fast, I just had to be with her for a while." "You're no taking her away, are you? Never do that. I couldn't bear it." The girl watched as her father began to cry. His shoulders shook and he fell to the sand. "Oh, do not take my little darling away with you. I'd die if you did." The sea woman smiled as the moonlight shone around her and she knelt close to the man and child. "You will always find me when you come to the beach at full moon. I will wait on you here, and we will ride the waves together." She placed her hand under the man's chin and wiped away his tears. "I will never take our daughter from you. I will meet you both here at the next full moon. Until then, remember, I love you." She turned, lifted the grey seal's skin from the sand, and walked into the sea. The girl held her dad's hand and pulled him to his feet. "Is that why you never wanted me to be close to the sea? Did you think she'd take me away?" Her father held her hand. "I fell in love with a Selkie. She gave me you, my beautiful daughter. And I've always been fearful you'd go to the sea and never come back. You're the only part of her I've got left, my darling. And I was sore afraid." The girl held her dad's hand and they walked home in the night. "Och, da," she said, "I'll always be here with you. But now I'll be able to know my mother as well. Will I know?" "Yes. On the next full moon, we'll both come down and spend time with your ma. That's a promise." They walked back to the cottage, closed the door on the night, and all was at peace. You see, yon story was told to me o'er and o'er when I was away. At full moon sometimes I'll go down to the sea. Selkies live very, very long lives, no like us humans. I ken I'll see her one moonlight night, and when I day, I'll walk wi' her into the water, and I'll stay wi' her there for the rest of time.
The reason I came to Edinburgh was because I fell in love with Arthur's Seat. I came up for an interview and I walked along Regent Road, and Arthur's Seat was like this great mountain, and I thought it was the edge of the city, and I thought, oh, that's great. I won't have to go far. I can be in the countryside. And then sometime later when I climbed up, I realised it was in the middle of the city. And, yeah, it's quite extraordinary. Susan Cheney, Our Morning from Heaven. In the beginning, one egg divided became two. That's what I knew for 9 whole months. This other person growing beside me, sleeping, waking, dreaming, sharing every heartbeat, curled so tight together we could suck each other's thumbs. Today I've decided to look in the mirror. Mostly I don't. It's always such a below-the-belt, punch-junk kind of shock. For Christ's sake, who the hell are you? How did you get to be this old, this exhausted? Suppose what's left of my hair came out in stringy clumps. Would I even care? One egg divided, and I divide myself again. Agnes, Senger, Senger, Agnes. Beryl says it's an affectation to change my name like that. And what does she know? Agnes is a lump of crumbling bone and flesh, a body that betrays me on every turn. Senger is felt and strong, a creature from the forest, sometimes nothing more than a fleeting shift in the wind. Of course, we bicker all the time. Always have, always will, I suppose. Beryl's a carnivore through and through, refuses to eat any fruit or veg, claims that's why she never farts, fancies herself as some kind of an armchair eco-warrior. I, on the other hand, with my plant-based diet, am releasing enough methane to melt the polar ice cap single-handed. I counter with the rainforest. All those trees destroyed for cattle to graze, cattle that became her spare ribs and burgers. Picture a cow's arse, Beryl. How's that for methane? This growing old lark is anything but a bloody lark. Me and Beryl together again. Husbands have come and gone. Children living on the other side of the world. It made sense at the time for me to move in with her. Now we're all but trapped. Every day it gets harder for us to drag ourselves up and down these endless stairs. The council sent us a social worker called Chris. Absolutely drop-dead bloody gorgeous. He's trying to get us a place in a sheltered housing complex with a lift. Rare as hen's teeth, apparently. Beryl goes all doolally when he visits. Has her nails done. Waves those ghastly acrylic talons right under the poor bloke's nose. Taps them on the tabletop. Claims it helps her to think when he asks her a question. Ha! The only thought she has when he's around is if she were 50 years younger, she'd be screwing his brains out. I like to pretend that I'm more subtle, dignified. But dear Lord, he's peachy. That baby fine hair tangled in the nape of his neck. My fingers ache to touch it. I snap off the bathroom light, open the window. The morning billows in from heaven, a fresh breeze blowing up from the Firth of Forth. More than anything I've ever longed for, more than praying for pain to pass or yearning for a child, I want to feel that breeze on my skin, taste salt on my lip. Beryl takes one look and knows what I'm thinking. For an instant, I see her as she once was, wearing her full-skirted 50s polka-dot dress and suede stilettos, hair swept back, laughing into the sun. Just 17 and wide open to life, trembling on the cusp of everything. Hold on, she says. I'll get my coat. I'm coming with you. At the top of the stairs, we hesitate. They're freshly washed, still wet. Beryl's breath flutters against my cheek. Something unknowable passes between us. I'm leaving Agnes behind, I tell her. She nods. Her hand reaches out for mine. Like astronauts, we step off into space.